This webcast is a service of SDPB. Good, useful, and full of wonder. SDPB.
The Supreme Court of the State of South Dakota, the Honorable Stephen R. Jensen presiding, is now in session.
You can be seated. Thank you. Good morning. The first case set for argument this morning is Steve and Monica Zirbel versus Dual County Commissioners, appeal file number 31317 and 31332. Mitchell Cohn is present, will be arguing on behalf of the appellants, and Ryan Vogel is present, will be arguing on behalf of Appellee. With that, each side will have 15 minutes for your initial argument, and Mr. Cohn, you'll have a 5-minute rebuttal. You can proceed.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Mitchell Cain, and I represent the appellants Steve and Monica Zirbel. This case primarily stems from three issues, one related to the standard of review, one related to the revocation or the vacation of Section 9 right-of-way, and the application of 3122 to the Zirbel's parcels.
Is the vacation of the right-of-way a preliminary issue? Mr. Cain, you've listed it second, but do we maybe have to resolve that before? Or somebody has to resolve it before we get to whether there's a trial de novo or not?
That is a great question, Justice, and we do take the position that it is a prerequisite determination as to whether or not the east parcel is in fact an isolated tract.
And it seems like along the way, maybe people just kind of operated under the belief that I guess it had been vacated. I mean, that's the whole premise underlying isolated tracts in part, right? That they're not served by right of way. So it kind of seemed like that was the kind of the operating thesis, but I think that has to get resolved. And I don't think whether it was litigated or not litigated, maybe it seems like, I mean, it's got to be resolved. It's either vacated or not vacated.
Correct. And so our position, the county's argument with respect to this issue is that it's a jurisdictional problem for both the circuit court and this court to consider. And we take the position that that's completely untrue. It's a prerequisite determination. Our whole position is if the Section 9 right-of-way is vacated, then the east parcel is an isolated tract. If it has not been properly vacated, then Chapter 3122 does not apply to the east parcel.
That may be right, but you really didn't litigate it that way in the circuit court and at the board, or at least it doesn't seem like you did. In other words, there was this memorandum from the state's attorney's office, and everyone seemed to kind of get on board with the idea that that was it. So did I miss that, or?
Well, one of the issues with respect to the memorandum decision that we've repeatedly taken issue with is the fact that the documents that support the interoffice memorandum were never testified to, they're unsubstantiated, they're not self-authenticating documents, which we further use as evidence to the court as why we believe a trial de novo should be required in this case. The Zirbels, to the contrary, from that evidence, have submitted a mountain of evidence we would take the position of to support that the vacation has not occurred. Communication from the Register of Deeds, the plat book, certified survey, and an affidavit from the surveyor displaying that no document has been recorded vacating the Section 9.
So would you agree that there really wasn't a decision made as to whether vacation occurred? It maybe was an implicit assumption throughout the litigation?
Correct, Chief Justice. The circuit court did not outright determine whether or not the vacation occurred, but implicit within the circuit court's decision, it had to rule that the vacation occurred.
So let's assume we think that's a live issue. We send that back to the county first, or do we send it back to the circuit court?
We would take the position that it would not have to be sent back to either body, mainly because if this court determines that the Section 9 right-of-way was not properly vacated, it provides direct access to the east parcel for the Zirbels.
But don't you have to put some evidence on and figure that out? I mean, are you saying we would figure that out?
Well, based off of what the Zirbels have presented, based on the underlying record and what's before the court, we would take the position that those unsubstantiated documents, and we would further cite within our briefs, I apologize to the court that I did not include these two case references, but it is the case of Lowe v. East Sioux Falls Quarry Co. and Haley v. Rapid City that requires the county to bear the burden to show that the vacation occurred. And so those cases hold that the rule has long been established in that state that once being a lawfully established public way can only be vacated or abandoned by some lawful method, and the burden of proof is on the one obstructing a lawfully established public way to show vacation.
So that's an argument about why you win in the litigation. But still, the fact kind of remains, as the Chief Justice suggests, factually, it either has to be there or not. So it's not really a question about the two parties we have here today. It's a larger question that impacts everybody in Dual County. Is this vacated or is it not? And so whether they had the burden, missed that, whether it was litigated properly or whatever, in the end, we have to make that determination, not based upon necessarily, you know, the arguments we have here, but factually. Has it happened? What circumstances are there? Because it's more than just the litigation that we have here. That is a public right-of-way or not.
Correct. I mean, that is the ultimate determination that we have been asking, that we've essentially taken the position of that it is an active right-of-way from the outset of this case.
So if you win on the vacation issue, case is over.
With respect to the east parcel.
Yeah.
Correct.
You still got the issue on the west.
We still have the issue with the west parcel.
And you still have probably, you're here, and maybe it's appropriate. So let's say that's right. Let's say, hey, the vacation issue is a loose end that needs to get tied up. But we still have to, it's probably right still to go forward and press on with what standard, trial de novo or the more deferential abuse of discretion, because that will be important for the remand, right? I mean, that's everything.
Absolutely, Justice. That is absolutely the position we are taking, because the West parcel is still in play, which I will get to Chapter 3122. However, to address the standard of review briefly, this court is well aware that 783-30 requires an appeal from the county to be heard de novo. However, beginning with Troy v. Township, the court clarified the judiciary's ability to review de novo as to whether or not the decision is quasi-judicial or non-quasi-judicial. And this court clarified that quasi-judicial acts investigate, declare, and enforce liabilities as they stand on present or past facts under laws already in existence. It's akin to the ordinary business of courts. For a non-quasi-judicial act, it must be policymaking in nature, and it must not adjudicate rights as between specific individuals. The Zerbels would submit that any decision under 3122 is a quasi-judicial act. It requires the county to specifically address the rights as between specifically identifiable individuals. Here, the Zerbels, as it relates to the interested parties. It also contemplates laws already in existence, i.e. Chapter 3122. There's no policy-making function with respect to the decision of 3122. The county argues under a single theory that the easement created under 3122 becomes a public right-of-way, and therefore, because it becomes a public right-of-way, it's automatically a non-quasi-judicial act. However, the Zerbels would state that 3122 specifically requires the county to consider the convenience of the parties. It does not ask the county to consider the general public or the county's desires as a whole.
Is it significant at all, or just sort of a interesting fact, that 3122.5 grants the owner of the land over which the new right-of-way is established a right to appeal and a trial de novo right, very, very specific right. Now, the Zerbels don't have that right under that statute, so they would have to use the more general statute, as you've suggested, under 7830. But that is a trial de novo that no one seems to be quarreling, and it's not presented, but if that's right, and a trial de novo is the result for an owner of land, it would be sort of incongruent to say that the Zerbels couldn't get a trial de novo if the landowners get one.
Well, and Justice, that's the position that we were going to take and ask the court to consider Section 3122.5 in its decision herein, because it's evident that the legislature, in preparing that statute, considered the fact of the quasi-judicial act. And the Zerbels would take this position with respect to the county's argument. If 3122.3 stated, the county shall consider the convenience of the parties and the general public in making its decision under 3122, then there's absolutely a policy-making function within the decision to render it potentially a non-quasi-judicial act. However, 3122.3 specifically states, consider the convenience of the parties, identifiable parties under laws already in existence.
So if, I know the county cites Carmody, says that case applied here would make this a administrative rather than quasi-judicial decision. You think Carmody stands in the way of your position in this case?
I do not, because in all of the underlying decisions, there is some consideration of public interest. The court found some consideration of public interest. Here, we take the position that 3122 explicitly and arguably prohibits the county from considering any public interest, because the statute explicitly says consider the convenience of the parties, specifically identifiable parties with their rights as amongst each other, aka exactly what this court holds with respect to quasi-judicial acts. So with respect to the standard of review, the Zirbles would take the position that a trial de novo was necessary here, and that's further exemplified by a lot of the underlying issues with respect to the record, the evidentiary issues, the ability to question and cross-examine the appraiser, the fact that the Zirbles received the appraisal effectively on the day of the meeting in which these easements were established.
But in fairness to the board, the boards aren't courts.
Correct.
And so they don't have rules of evidence, they don't have rules of procedure. They're folks who are serving in those roles to serve in their communities. They're not used to running a contested adversarial proceeding.
Correct. And that is where, if this were truly a legislative decision or a non-quasi-judicial decision, there's less of an issue. But because we take the position that it's adjudicating rights as amongst these specific individuals, and it's essentially a statutory right to the Zirbles, Chapter 3122 is a statutory right for access to their property, the rules of evidence and the fundamentals of our judiciary system should apply in determining, for example, whether or not these newspaper clippings or handwritten notes are truly existent.
It's a rather exceptional right, isn't it?
Yes.
At the common law, the Zirbles would be at the complete mercy of the adjoining landowners who could charge anything. So in some ways, the Zirbles, and I know they regard it exactly this way, but they win, at least by virtue of this statutory remedy that wouldn't have to exist. The common law would not help them obtain access in this case, unless I'm missing it, because it doesn't seem like there's a common grantor.
Well, we would just take the position that the statutes authorize the access.
And that's, no, I understand.
And that's what we pled under. And Justice, with respect to your comment of winning, we do absolutely appreciate the severity of the decision here. We are seeking to effectively encumber interested parties' properties pursuant to this chapter. However, the Zirbles are going to largely take the position that we lost through the underlying proceedings, mainly because pursuant to, and if I can shift to Chapter 3122, what happened in this underlying case is very contrary to what the Zirbles reasonably anticipated would occur under 3122. 3122.3 specifically requires the county to consider the convenience of the parties. So we're going to ask this court to find that their decision and the circuit court's decision was arbitrary with respect to the location of these easements and the damages, ultimately the application of 3122.
If you lose on trial de novo?
In both circumstances. This is essentially an alternative.
Well, but if you win on trial de novo, it all goes back.
Correct. Okay. 3122.3 requires the county to consider the convenience of the parties. Here's what happened. The county scheduled a June 20th, 2024 meeting, and in the first 2 minutes, they asked all parties to identify their proposed routes. At that time, we had no idea of potential obstructions, damages, intrusions, anything to that effect. Obviously, the Zirbles had not even been able to access their property at that point. The county then defers decision on anything until an appraisal can be completed. Approximately a year goes by, and the Zirbles have zero contact with the appraiser, zero contact with the county, absolutely no involvement. We show up at the April 9th meeting, and we were provided the appraisal, again, less than 24 hours beforehand. And then if this court reviews the transcript, the Zirbles were essentially precluded from submitting any contrary proposals to the three alternatives.
Do you think that the county commission possessed the authority to engage an appraisal or an appraiser?
I do believe that they had the opportunity to engage an appraiser.
Did they have the authority to do it? They're creatures of statute, and they can do certain things and not other things. Did they have the power to hire an appraiser to come in and help them assess damages?
We would take the position that, yes, they would. 3122.3 and 3122.4 state that the county commissioner shall assess and appraise the damages. If they want to use an appraiser to do so, that's fine. Now, we take the position with respect to the appraisal costs. That's why the circuit court was correct, because those two statutes require the county to do that function, and 3122.6 does not contemplate appraisal costs. But going back to...
You know, in your waning moments... Maybe I'll talk to you about that sixth statute in your reply. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Just to conclude on 3122 and the arbitrariness of its decision, the statute requires consideration of the convenience of the parties. We show up at this April 9th meeting, and the county repeatedly told us we could not alter, modify, change, or otherwise do anything to the appraisal, because in doing so, we'd have to revisit this appraiser. And they did not have the appraiser present at this meeting. All parties were essentially handcuffed to these three alternatives with drastic damages that were in place when the Zirbels did not have the opportunity to have any discourse with the appraiser. We take the position that 3122.3 requires a fluid conversation between the county, the dominant tenement, and the servient tenement owners. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Payne. Mr. Vogel, you may proceed with your argument.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Ryan Vogel from Richardson Law Firm in Aberdeen, and I represent the appellee, the dual county commissioners in this matter. From our perspective, this appeal is about the proper role of the reviewing court in determining the standard of review. It's been discussed here earlier whether it's de novo, whether it is abuse of discretion.
So trial de novo, as opposed to de novo review. So de novo review, no deference. Trial de novo is, it's a brand new deal, of course.
Correct. Yes, trial de novo or an abuse of discretion standard. And it's our position that the circuit court properly determined that this was a non-quasi-judicial action taken by the county and applied the deferential abuse of discretion standard and determined and reviewed the record on that and ruled in favor of the county. And in doing so, took the guiding principles for the standard review, which come from Troy Township. Prior to Troy Township, as this court is aware, it was kind of a mismatch of what type of appeal, or if any appeal, was granted to a certain person. And Troy Township sets forth kind of three guideposts, whether you're enforcing existing rights, whether it's the ordinary business of the court, and whether this could have been brought as an original action before the court, and our position is it's none of those. Here, what we have from the county's perspective is a forward-looking action that is specifically delegated to the county by the legislature, and that is to provide access, create a route with the convenience of the parties, and then assess damages for that route.
And assess damages to the party that's requesting. The statute talks only about the convenience of the parties. It doesn't talk about need or public assessment or anything like that. It's a right that results in an adversarial process. Evidence is used, and we use legal principles that are already established. It doesn't seem, at least at first blush, to me anyway, to look like a policy decision of administrative or quasi-legislative variety. Why am I wrong?
I think that's why we look at the Carmody case, we look at the Surratt case, we look at Troy Township and McLean Township. When we look at those cases, all of those cases involve multiple parties. When we look at Troy Township, it's the vacation of a road, and we look at the public as a whole, as well as there's landowners who are going to be affected by the vacation of a road. And when you move on to the Carmody case, you have an individual, just like in this case. So when you look at Carmody, you have an individual who is applying to the county drainage board for a permit. In the case at hand, we have the Zirbels, the appellants here, who applied to the county for access. Similar procedural step. And then it's up to the county to decide, one, is it an isolated tract, and where will access be, and what will the damages be? Just like in the permitting process for a drainage permit, the county drainage board or the township decides, one, are we going to grant this permit? And encompassed within that, you have other landowners and the public as a whole who are going to be affected by this decision of the county commission. And the key point on that is, when you look at the guideposts, is this the ordinary business of the courts creating a public access route? Because that's what this is.
What's your answer to that question? Is that the ordinary business of the courts?
It's not.
Why do you say that?
Because the statutes specifically grant the power to townships, counties, and the state.
This test isn't whether it is what the courts do. It's whether it's like what courts do, whether it's akin to what courts do. And so my rejoinder, I guess, to the argument would be, this is essentially a private condemnation. Condemnation actions occur in courts all the time, where public entities, and this is being taken under the auspices of the county, where public entities take property all the time, and they do it in courts. In fact, 18 states, by my account, have this sort of procedure, and they delegate it not to the local boards and commissions, but they delegate it to courts.
My answer to that, Justice, is when you look at the appeal statute within 31-22, and that's 22-5, and that was discussed earlier, where the servient landowner, the land that is being taken, has a option to appeal with a trial de novo.
And you don't challenge that. That's a true trial de novo.
Right, because in that circumstance, there is a taking from that servient landowner. And that's akin to the takings that we see from the Department of Transportation and such, where there can be an original action, a constitutional action brought before the court.
Why is it any less a taking from the perspective of the person who's petitioning? They're doing the taking.
Because nothing's actually being taken from them. It's being given to them.
But the rights are affected in a reciprocal way, aren't they?
In a sense, yes. But without this creature of statute here, where access is granted through statute, they have no access, like what was brought up earlier. So what's happening here is the legislature has proposed a statute and has enacted a statute where something is given to an owner of an isolated tract that they would not otherwise have. So, and that's why my argument is it's not a taking, it's giving them something. And along with that, we have to balance the taking that is coming from these servient landowners. And that's why a trial de novo is specifically mentioned in the statutes for the servient landowners and not for the individual who's being granted access.
Can I ask you, do you agree that it was implicit in the judge's decision that the section line was vacated?
I do. And that harkens back to earlier on decisions before my office became involved. There was an appeal to the circuit court about whether or not this was an isolated tract. And there was a decision, and when it came along, the judge decided it was an isolated tract. And there was this memorandum from the state's attorney in Dual County. And encompassed within that was more than just his general thought. There was a resolution and a publication of a road vacation. Granted, the appellants argue, well, that wasn't published. That wasn't recorded. Well, when we look at the statutes, when road vacations need to be recorded, it was after that. That road vacation was in 1959. So the county's position is we can't vacate a road that's not ours, and we can't create a road that's not ours. That was
a
township.
So I understand you acknowledge that this is implicit in this decision is this is an isolated tract. It's been vacated. If that's the case, then isn't it an issue in the case? Because it seems like your argument is, well, this isn't even part of the appeal, whether or not it was vacated. It has nothing to do with it. But if it is implicit, then isn't it part of the appeal?
I think it is a part of the appeal in the sense that there was evidence before the circuit court that this road was vacated. The resolution and the publication of that resolution. And if there was going to be any challenge to that road vacation, it wasn't incumbent upon the county to go challenge it. If appellants felt, well, no, that road was not vacated, that should have been handled with the township.
So you're arguing is it's more of a waiver?
Correct.
What was the
evidence?
Well, how can a private party waive a public's right to or the public's right to a right-of-way? How can any private party, the Zerbels, anybody else, how can they say, hey, on behalf of everybody, we're giving up?
Well, a part of the waiver is there is going to be new access here, created by a public right-of-way created by the county. And when we go back farther, the township has published minutes and a resolution that it was vacated. That is what is of record right now.
Well, let's talk about that. How is it of record? You said it was evidence, but I didn't hear anyone testify about that or see anyone testify about it. I didn't see any affidavits of it. It's just in there.
Correct. That was part of the decision-making power of the county. They received this information, and it, like the Chief Justice stated, that was implicit in Judge Elsher's decision, the trial court's decision, that it was vacated based on the news article, the news publication and that resolution. And getting back to the point is, if appellants wanted to challenge that, they had avenues to go to the township. If the township said, yeah, it's vacated, they could have started a new action with the township, a declaratory action or something of that nature to determine, is this public access still here? That never happened. This case went on for some time. That never happened.
So under ordinary waiver principles, you might have a great argument there. And we've whizzed right by that issue. But again, in order to accept your argument, we have to indulge the premise that a single private party is entitled to waive or can waive and has the capacity and the ability to waive something that is a public right. And I think that might be a premise to support.
And I guess my argument kind of is what it is. A private party waiving a right of the public as whole is not necessarily, it can't be done. But in this case, the argument is, even if that right's waived, there is new public access here. So we have access, it's there in the same location again.
So that's kind of a no prejudice argument.
Correct.
So with the exception of the money, that's a part of it.
Correct.
So assume for a minute that we say there's never been a decision whether this road has been vacated or this section line's been vacated or not. We remand it back to do that. I assume your position would be that needs to go back to the county in the first instance because this is an administrative decision rather than a quasi-judicial, and it can't just go back for de novo trial to the circuit court.
Correct. That would go back to the county, and in essence, it would fall on the Zerbels as well to prove that that isn't a public right-of-way. And again, I think that's where a declaratory action with Altamont Township would need to be taken.
So that's my point, is it seems like this you could certainly resolve this through a declaratory action. A party in a first instance could say, hey, I think this road has not been vacated and it's not an isolated track. You could take that into court. So why does that go back to the county as an administrative decision if this is really just a declaratory judgment action that courts deal with all the time?
Well, because the proper party, Altamont Township, isn't involved. They need to have a say in it as well from our perspective.
You said the Zerbels would have to prove that it was vacated. I thought our standard was that the party seeking the vacation of a right-of-way has to prove that it was vacated, which would, in this instance, be the county.
In essence, yes, that could be possible. And it could be Altamont Township as well. If they come in and say, this is vacated, here's what our records show, this is vacated, and the Zerbels still disagree with that, then it would fall, on Altamont Township to show it was vacated. And I think the evidence would be there through the resolution.
So when this would come to a court, so there's kind of, it seems like we're mushing together the decisions or the questions. So obviously whether to vacate or not vacate is up to the governing body that is responsible for that road. That's a township decision. But whether or not it was done properly, whether the rules were followed, and it sounded like the main issue here was that it never got recorded. Why that is a decision or something that seems like a court could make, because all we're doing is applying the rules of here's what's required to vacate and it wasn't applied here, or it was, whatever the case may be. But then if it is going to be vacated, say it's not, township can go back and vacate it. But whether to vacate or not vacate is the administrative decision. But whether or not it was done properly is the type of thing that courts look at and consider.
Correct.
Right?
I do agree with that. And I think that would, it falls in line if this is remanded back for determination whether that road was vacated. If it was not vacated properly, we don't have an isolated tract for the east parcel.
For the east one, yeah.
We still have the west parcel. So this court may still be dealing with standard of review and so forth. If it's remanded back and the determination is made that it was vacated, we're back up here again for the east parcel.
Perhaps.
We have, what's that?
Perhaps.
Perhaps. Perhaps.
Mr. Vogel, can I please, pardon my interruption, but I'd be grateful for your help. Where can I find in the record, because I'm not seeing it, the evidence of vacation in the record? I thought I saw it one time in an appended copy of the memorandum from the state attorney's office, but I can't find that darn thing either. So can you help me?
I apologize, Justice. I don't have that right in front of me, the exact appendix section.
And that's the other question. Was it an appendix on the back of a brief, or was it actually submitted as evidence, like what we would call record evidence, that sort of evidence?
It was before the county commission, and the county commission had access to it as part of their record when making their decision. In the sense of, that's where sometimes these county commissions or local board decisions sometimes become. My time's up. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vogel. Mr. Kane, you can proceed with rebuttal.
Mr. Kane, I'm sorry. I'm just going to hit you with a couple quick questions and then let you get going. If we accept your argument on the trial de novo, that would probably take care of the conflict issue, correct? Because it wouldn't be going back to the commission anyway. It would be going back to the circuit court for trial de novo, and this case probably, I can't envision a scenario where it would go back. Potentially it could. It seems like it might render that one moot. Your thoughts?
Correct, Justice, yeah.
And then on the Stash 6 statute, the statute, you'd mentioned earlier that the Dash 6 statute doesn't contemplate, forgive me, I'm not going to do a good job capturing what you said, but something along the lines of this doesn't really contemplate, or this contemplates, I don't know, the cost like this appraisal being apportioned to the isolated tract owner. And I was just going to push back a little bit, because I will acknowledge that it doesn't say costs like this can be attributed to the tract owner. That much is true. But it contains a provision that makes it conditional and allows the isolated tract owner free use of this newly created right-of-way, and that will be complete. But here's the proviso. Provided that the owner of such isolated tract shall have paid all of the costs of the proceedings in laying out and assessing the damage of the right-of-way. And then there's a separate provision, which I know you've mentioned in your brief, that allows a modest reimbursement for the commissioners, but that's after an and. So it seems to me that that language, although maybe it's not as direct as we might think it might or could be, conditions use upon paying all of the costs associated with laying out and assessing the damages. Why is that not an appraisal cost?
So, and that's a great point, Justice, but our position has been that if you want to use another analogy with respect to that, the appraiser is an independent contractor of the county. Mr. Vogel's office is now representing the county with respect to this case. They could also then argue that the Zerbels would be responsible in paying their independent contractor.
Don't tell them that. Maybe they'll do that.
Well, correct. But so with respect to 3122.3 and 3122.4, those two statutes explicitly say that the county commissioners are responsible for assessing, and that does use the explicit word appraise for the damages to be delivered to the Serbian tenement owners.
We have a number of rules that direct us and focus us on the text, and if we have, and the cases are legion, if we can read the text and apply the plain provisions of it, we do that. So in this case, there's that. But there's the also the practical consideration that if we affirm the circuit courts flipping that apportionment to the county, then the residents of Dual County are participating in assessing damages for something that really ultimately benefits the Zirbles principally.
Correct, and that's why we took the position from the very outset when the county requested the appraiser, we immediately objected, citing that there was no need for said appraiser. And furthermore, in our underlying briefs, we certainly would object to the need for the appraiser that was used. This was a $30,000 appraisal where the appraiser considered factors like temporary construction easements and drainage and things of that nature. The easements prescribed by 3122 require dirt path access. They do not require a road. They do not require gravel. They do not require construction. They simply require access. And so for the county to seek to thrust $30,000 onto the Zirbles pursuant to their simple petition for access, we took the position that 3122.6 does not authorize that right. Now, I do, just with my last couple minutes here, want to hit on the questions the court posed regarding the vacation. I believe that the court has hit it on its head, and the arguments presented by the county here today display the fact that this is not a jurisdictional question. It is a prerequisite determination that has to be made by a court. And our issue is not with the Altamont Township. We don't have any desire to go seek and challenge whether or not this vacation occurred or whether the procedures were proper. We're taking the position that they were not. Therefore, the vacation has not occurred. And I would like to quick just cite House Bill 250, which was amended, which amended these sections in 1951 before this alleged vacation. Section 2 of that amendment stated, whenever a governing body or any township or county of this state having jurisdiction has had or shall have presented to it a petition for the vacation, after due hearing, such governing body has granted or shall grant in whole or in part, or there shall be recorded in the office of the Register of Deeds of the county wherein such area is located, a certified copy of the resolution or record of the action taken of such body relative to such petition. There are multiple statutes and chapters, the Zirbles argue, in our state that require recording to provide notice to parties, and that's exactly what the Zirbles are here requesting from the court as well. Thank you.
Mr. King, may I have one more question, Chief, please? Can you help me, and it's okay, I know I'm putting you on the spot. Can you help me find some evidence, that memorandum, which I don't know if that's really evidence, but whatever we've got about this vacation that's actually in the record that we can look at?
The interoffice memorandum from the Dual County State's Attorney? I believe that's approximately around AR 45-ish.
Okay. Got it. Thank you. Was it actually submitted to?
So how it happened was when, if I can respond, Chief.
Go ahead.
The Zirbles submitted their petition, the what we're calling the petition, the letter to the county in November of 2023, after they were served a notice of trespass. This is, and I should start from the start if you guys are okay.
No, I've got it. I think I've got it.
Essentially, they were confirmed that the section line right-of-way was not vacated by Dual County. So they went to traverse to their property. They were served a notice of trespass. We served this letter on the county asking for relief. And in that time, an interested party, allegedly, Bill Moe, discovered these records in his home, is what we were told, provided them to the Dual County.
Let me ask you this, what you're telling us now, is any of this in the record?
No.
Okay, well, let's wrap up then.
Okay.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, Council, for your arguments this morning. We'll be in recess for 10 minutes.